This episode of Coffee House Shots is sponsored by Alliance Witten Investment Trust. From the OPEC oil crisis of the 1970s, the financial crash in 2008, to the COVID epidemic and Liz Truss's doomed premiership, there has been no shortage of economic crises over the last 58 years. And yet, throughout that time, every single year, without fail, we've paid out an increased dividend to our shareholders. In fact, Alliance Witten's history dates all the way back to 1888. And today, we manage around £5 billion in assets. If you're looking for a less stressful way to invest in stocks and shares, learn more about Alliance Witten and find your comfort zone.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Hill and Paul Goodman, esteemed journalist and Conservative peer. Now, we're going to be talking about how is Kemi Badenoch doing? She has plenty of critics at the moment, but this was the week she tried to show that she actually does have a plan and she is willing to do some policy after all. James, to kick us off with what week Kemi takes action looked like.
Yep, so this was about the announcement on Tuesday that Kemi Badenoch no longer thinks that net zero is achievable by 2050. Actually, it's now impossible. And this policy announcement that the Conservatives will no longer abide by the 2050 net zero agenda was really a sort of way in to tee up the fact that they're doing a number of policy reviews, policy commissions, basically trying to use the example of the last two Conservative leaders who entered government from opposition. Those in the last 50 years were, of course, David Cameron, and before that, Margaret Thatcher, and to learn from the best of both of those as they try and sort of build credibility and find a programme that's going to get them back into government in 4 years' time. And of course, the policy commissions are going to be kicking off for the next 7 months. My understanding is that there's going to be a number of announcements, sort of drumbeat, as it were, every 3 to 4 weeks up until conference. And I've spoken to a number of MPs, some of them who didn't vote for Kemi Badenoch. You know, of course, only about 35% of the Tory MPs did vote for her, are saying this is a good sign that they're actually delighted to get their teeth finally struck into stuff. You know, they want to actually talk about things and get on with their brief. Against that, of course, there are some people saying, hang on a sec, did you spend the past 4 or 5 months or so taking too long about what you were going to do and setting up these policy commissions? And really, the danger, of course, is they're all under the Shadow Secretary of State, the Shadow Cabinet Minister. The benefit of that is that you try to avoid a David Cameron-style scenario whereby you have people outside the Shadow Cabinet taking a lead on it, and you maybe have a lack of joined-up thinking. You have some which are very incremental policy commissions, but you also have very radical ones which then have to be disowned, a bit like, I think, in 2006, the John Redwood one was. But on the other hand, of course, it just means everyone's sort of ploughing their own furrow. And yes, it might keep the front benches organised, but is this really what's needed, given how much speed is a premium, given how important it is to respond to reform, given that we now have a third party on the right, which we didn't really have beforehand? Is that really enough over the next 6 months or so?
Paul, I was speaking to a Tory MP about this, so I wouldn't say as a harsh Kemi Badenoch critic, but also isn't a super fan. Somewhere in between the two. And they were saying, you know, well, it's all very well, the net zero announcement, which they thought had landed well, but they said, you know, it's one announcement in a desert of several months. And that was a real issue for them. Do you think that it feels as though there's a bit more energy behind Kemi Badenoch at the moment, or not so much?
So she became leader, what, last autumn? And the criticism since then is that nothing much has come. So now something has come. And I think the very first thing every Conservative MP should do is be grateful that there's something rather than the gap. So that's a bit of a start. Now, my understanding is they've been ready to announce this for a few weeks, but have kept putting off the announcement because of the foreign affairs news elsewhere and the antics of Trump and what's going on in Ukraine. So, you know, let's just turn from it to what it looks like. Now, my understanding, this may be wrong, is that she was advised by senior people who were involved with the Cameron and Osborne reviews not to go down that road and bring in outsiders who would look at policy in a big thematic way, because the people who head these big reviews may run away with them and make recommendations you don't want to implement. And if you think back to the Osborne-Cameron period, there was exactly that difficulty with the Economics Commission, chaired by my colleague in the law, Michael Forsyth, and I think up to a point the Environment Commission, chaired by John Deben, now also in the Lords. So instead, the shadow cabinet members are in charge. But this raises a number of questions. First of all, now they've started, do you have to keep these Chateau Cabinet people in place for longer than you might otherwise do if the reviews are going to work? I suspect the answer to that is yes. Then second, you'll get a very variegated result, because I think some of them will be very energetic. I mean, there are some very energetic members of the Chateau Cabinet, like Andrew Griffith and Chris Philp. There are others who are probably less so. And then finally, I suppose, what's it going to look like over the next few months? I suspect the net zero speech is a precursor, in the sense that it'll say what they're not going to do. And then when they're asked what they are going to do, the answer will be, well, the policy review will tell you. So if James is right and they are going to do something every 3 or 4 weeks, I imagine it'll be something of that kind.
And of course, James, the backdrop of this is, you know, there have always been a group of Tory MPs. There's always been a group of figures on the right who don't like Kemi Badenoch much. Some of that is personality politics. Some of that is a sense that her shadow cabinet is seen as being a bit too One Nation. The Robert Jenrick supporters who are there were really the One Nation MPs that Robert Jenrick brought in to make himself look as though he was wide reaching. But is there a Get Kemi campaign at the moment? And if so, how seriously should the leader's office take it?
So, I mean, on Monday, it was the Margaret Thatcher CPS conference, 50 years since Margaret Thatcher was elected leader. And George Osborne made a good point on stage with Niall Ferguson. He said, you know, the first year of opposition is great, but every year after that, it gets worse and worse, which is that everyone's like, fantastic, we've survived, we're here, we're back in Parliament.
And you're all, I'm not sure it even feels that great for them right now, but yeah.
I'm talking, like, sort of the 26 new MPs, they're happy they're there. You know, everyone's, we've survived, et cetera. We got out from the last chopper out of Saigon. But every year, it's sort of the incrementalism, it adds up, doesn't it? It gets diminishing returns, the joys of opposition, it gets harder and harder and harder. So this is the time, you know, to kind of stamp your authority on the party, make a lot of effort in this first 2 years to tee yourself up for the rest of the parliament. My sense is, you know, and I've been reading some of the commentary this week, and already other publications are speculating about who succeeds Kemi Badenoch. I don't think these conversations will be had this year. I think the key point, talking to some MPs, seems to be 2026, which is May next year, when the Welsh and Scottish elections, on current polling, it seems Reform will finish first or second in Cardiff Bay. In Scotland, they could tie for MSPs. So I think that's going to be the key thing. And of course, looking ahead to 6 weeks' time, you know, we've now, it looked like we might have the Rancon by-election on the 2nd of May. We might have the number of mayoralties, as well as 1,600 councillors or so. So I think that those conversations are a little premature. People do have the sense that they want to give Kemi Badenoch a time, but this is why time is of the essence. And everything that Kemi Badenoch can do to control and ensure that she's giving an image, a projection of dynamism and making the most of the opportunities available to her, those are all going to go down well with Tory MPs.
So I'm sure after the local elections, which surely can't be good for the Conservatives because they're fighting them from a high point.
Put on that, do you think there's a chance they're slightly less bad because several of the key council votes have been delayed as a result of these Labour votes? Or do you still think it's going to be pretty awful for them?
Well, they're clearly less bad because for the Conservatives and for Labour, because Reform are not going to get the chance, if they would take it, I don't know, to sweep Essex, because there won't be elections in Essex. But generally thinking, if you look at it, the Conservatives were at a high point when this cycle of elections was last fought. So they're going to lose seats. And Reform is starting from almost nothing, so they're going to gain them. So it's hard to see how it can be a good news story on the night. And sure, I think afterwards there will be a flurry of agitation about Kemi Badenoch. But it's not obvious that there's a clear successor. Point one. Point two is that the Conservatives are in a very difficult position. They are like a rickety old ship that is losing planks. And it may be you can weld the ship back together and get it moving, which is what Kemi Badenoch's got to try and do. The dilemma if you change another leader, if you have a sixth leader in, 10 years, is more planks fall off the ship. There are more unhappy people in the crew, and your last state is worse than the first. So I don't know what will happen in the aftermath of the local elections, but I would have thought James's instinct is right, and that there's more likely to be trouble for Kemi Badenoch if there is next year rather than this. That said, just finally, I think George Osborne was being a bit mischievous and winding his audience up. You know, it's clearly
I've never come across George Osborne being mischievous.
No, I mean, surely it's never ever happened before, so this would be a unique first. But I think he was teasing them a bit. And it is true that the years in opposition can get more difficult. But equally, governments go through midterm unpopularity sometimes, which evens things out. And this government's already not particularly popular, and you don't know what's going to happen to reforms. So it's just possible to believe Kemi Badenoch will get a lucky break.
Just on the point about the ships, I think rather than perhaps overthrowing the ship's captain, the key point is about the sort of ship of Theseus approach, which is replacing those planks which are particularly looking like they're going to go, and maybe doing up different bits of the party. The key thing, of course, is conveying that narrative of party reform, and I'd contrast reform favourably here. I think reform have had a good narrative, which is that look, we are trying to rebuild the party, give us a bit of time, etc. And I think you could have more with that with CCHQ rather than the kind of leaks of layoffs, etc., and explaining what the party's doing. It's the classic Blairite line: change the party, change the country. I think perhaps sometimes a bit more of a kind of communication of what's been done over the past 6 months, where the next 6 months are going, would probably be useful to Kemi Badenoch to show that she is going to be putting all the fight into this as she gets through, first of all, a very difficult set of local elections, and then prepares for 2026.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Paul. And finally, while we have you here, boy, do I have an event to tell you about. It's happening next Thursday, or even the Thursday coming. That's the 27th of March, 7:30 p.m. Coffee House Shots Live, Reeves' Dilemma, the Spring Statement Special. And this is, of course, the day after Rachel Reeves will be standing up in the Commons Chamber for what was meant to be a brief update, but has now become more significant, given we're expecting growth to be slashed, her headroom to potentially be gone. And I'll be joined by Michael Gove, along with Lord Morris Glassman, of course, the only Labour politician to attend Donald Trump's inauguration and a source of inspiration to Number 10 these days, along with Lord David Frost, the former Brexit negotiator, to look at the UK's position on the economy, but also much more about where politics will go next. So please do join what I think may be my last, unless, of course, I'm invited back in the future for other reasons. My last, at least, actually, I'll correct. This will be my last Coffee House Shots Live as political editor, I think. So for that reason alone, also to get a ticket. And if this hard sell has convinced you, please go to www.spectator.co.uk/coffeehouselive. That's www.spectator.co.uk/coffeehouselive.